Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of... Oops.
Whose voice was that?
Bruce, are you there, Bruce?
Jump ball.
Am I there?
Yeah. Well, mostly.
Yeah, mostly, right? Yeah, okay. That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of hosting an intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more or less, and he invariably always offered much, much more. Let me introduce the Brieflies after this rough start this morning, guiding us from behind the board. And did you push the wrong switch, Truman?
No, that was all you, Bruce. I'm sorry.
That was all me. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Guiding us from behind the board of the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon and keeping us on course, even if it is into the treetops. Former airline pilot, treetop landing aficionado, flight instructor, Vachon Airport commissioner, West Texas devotee, and former military intelligence specialist, Truman O'Brien.
I wasn't sure you were going to get through all of that, Bruce. It's getting bigger every time, I think. You know?
That's right.
I'm going to have to put in a few more lies in there, you know.
They might string you up in West Texas.
No question of that. Yeah.
Good to have you.
Thank you.
Joining Truman in the studio is Truman's wingmate, airline co-owner, exceptionally bright Fulbright scholar, former high fashion shoe salesman, women's shoe salesman, right?
Right.
And former tort law professor, or would that be a Claire professor, or more properly, a professor of eclairs? I'm not sure. Former Washington State Assistant Attorney General Craig Bellis. How are you this morning, Craig?
Just as sweet as a chocolate eclair.
As you should be. Right?
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
Can we check with your wife on that?
No.
No. And zooming in from his home here on Vachon above Burton is the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, our indefatigable defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate, Kevin Jones. Welcome, Kevin.
Good to be here. Just coming out of my post-indictment late night news hounding, and I'm happy to be here sharing the day with you all.
It's good to have you. And joining us today, well, I'm historian Bruce Hallman. I'm zooming in from above KVI Beach. And joining us today is Fire Chief Matt Binsey, Vachon Island Fire and Rescue Chief. Matt, how are you today?
I'm doing excellent. Great to be on the show here. Look forward to our conversation.
Good. I trust all is well in your world?
All is well and all is busy. Look forward to chatting about how busy we've been.
We don't like hearing that you're busy. We prefer you were not busy. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Well, before we jump...
It is the season, maybe, to be busy.
Oh, it is, yeah. And we appreciate you being on watch, you know, watching all these wildfires taking place. So before we jump into talking about the fire levy and Vachon Island Fire and Rescue, let's take a moment to check in with everyone about what special things you have experienced this past week. So Truman, other than being a star on the front page of the Beachcomber, what can pass that, right?
Yeah. Well, I've been there before, unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm not sure which. But,
depending on the circumstances.
Exactly. Hey, you know, rather than talking about what's going on with me, I do have a quick PSA that I'd like to pass around. Starting on Saturday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Hetty over at the Sugar Shack is having a fundraiser for the folks over in Maui. And she has six bands lined up. She's got a lot of food, a lot of drink. want everybody to come, bring their checkbooks, bring your credit card, bring cash, and the money will go toward the food bank over in Maui, and also to an animal rescue group over there. So Saturday at 3 o'clock here on the island, like everybody to show up and bring lots of money. So that's my stuff.
Great. Good. Kevin, how about you? What's been happening with you other than late night readings of indictments?
Well, the highlight of the week had to have been a repeat excursion to the Lake of the Angels, which is nestled in the southwest corner of our Olympic National Park. And it's rated a hard trail. Our plan is to descend that trail during a backpacking trip coming up here later in the week. And we wanted to make sure to put eyes on it so that it was something within our capacity. But I can tell you that when you get above about 4,000 vertical feet right now in the Olympic Mountains and probably the Cascades, the wildflowers are abundant. Mm. And, of course, it was just a spectacular day. So for those with mountain interests, this is the season to be out there.
Mm. Fantastic.
And we checked the air quality and no fire smoke. So that's double good for us. Yeah. Hope it stays that way.
Yeah, let's hope so. So, Matthew, how about you? What's happened with you this past week?
Well, excuse me, this past week, my day-to-day world revolves around VIFR and, even on the weekends at times in the office and working with our staff, I did have the opportunity to go down to a birthday party for a good friend of mine down in Oregon, longtime a friend who I taught with around the country for the International Association of Firefighters. So got together with a whole bunch of firefighters to celebrate his birthday. He's the president of the Oregon Professional Firefighters Union.
Wow.
And he's a good friend of mine out of Clackamas County. So we drove down to Happy Valley and fought the I-5 traffic back up on Sunday and got together with some friends on the north end too, some new neighbors as we moved into our new house out on the north end. So had a somewhat fire related weekend, but wasn't in the office over on Bank Road.
Good. Sounds like a good weekend. So Craig, how about you? What have you been up to?
Well, I tell you, my neighbor is the Sayers, and Mark Sayer was one of the individuals primarily responsible for the Vashon Island Film Festival. And my wife was out of town for most of that, so I sat there in the theater watching these tremendous independent films that were selected and put on, and I just had a ball watching these. This is the second annual, if I recall, and it was even better than last year. So.
Yeah, Truman.
I forgot one thing that I did this weekend that I have to talk about. Just take a second. Joe and Edie Ulatowski, very famous island folks, celebrated their 70th wedding anniversary this weekend. And they were also celebrating their combined birthdays. And they would not reveal their birthdays, but you can imagine that if it's their 70th wedding anniversary, they're up there in the 90s. So anyway, it was a wonderful party, and they are doing great. And it was great seeing them, so I did have to say a shout out to them.
Great, thanks. So, Craig, any film that is a must see?
Well, I mean, they're all. Just go back and look at the Vashon Island Film Festival. I tell you, there's one called Blackfish, as in lutefisk, octopus, and I guess in Swedish. It's a dark one, but it's really well done. It's a short subject, so I think it's about 16, 17 minutes long. And then another one, the full-length one that I watched was Escaping Ohio, which I thoroughly enjoyed. A much lighter film, to say the least.
Was it autobiographical?
Well, I did escape Ohio in high school and went to California, which is kind of what the question in this particular movie is all about. The woman who stars in it, wrote it and directed it, was therefore the question and answer afterwards, and learned a lot about her background and motivations and coming up with this particular movie. And it was a very, very enjoyable movie. She's from Akron, which is northeastern Ohio. Great movie. Lots of good movies, though.
Great. Sounds like a good film festival this year. Yeah. So my week's been kind of crazy. We replaced a deck. Just replaced the covering on the deck. The foundation of the deck was in fairly decent shape, but moving everything off, all the pots, you know, my wife has of geraniums and stuff, and then moving them back on, that's why I'm sort of like, I'm sitting here sweating because we've been moving pots all morning, and it's sort of like, oh gosh, I need to get on the radio so I can sit down and catch my breath. But it's been a good week, and it's interesting to watch the temperatures as high as they are right now. It's not very usual for us here in the Pacific Northwest, and of course the danger of wildfires. Bashan really hasn't seen significant wildfires since the 1960s or 70s, and so always interested in watching how dry things get. And I know we'll talk more about this later on when we talk with Matt. So been a good week. Today, of course, is a significant day. Oh, Kevin, jump right in.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, one thing I've noticed, and maybe it's the warm weather, the salal berries around our place are phenomenal right now. And I actually made some salal jam, which unfortunately the crock pot lid fractured into the crock pot. So now the glass shards are in mix with the jam. So it's going to be, you know, out in the compost pile or in the garbage. But yeah, if you have salal in your yard, you might just go wander around and just check and see if the warm weather has produced immense salal berries, which are actually pretty tasty.
You know, another thing, native people on Bashan would, and all through the Northwest, you take salal berries and sort of crush them up and then whip them, and it becomes a little bit like a whipped cream. A little bit of honey. And so you might want to try that.
Yum, yum.
Yeah. Yummy kind of addition to anything. Today is August 15th. It's National Relaxation Day, so get out there and relax. It's also Lemon Meringue Pie Day. So I had a great idea. Maybe we can start doing a fundraiser for Voice of Bashan where we have a pie in the face contest. With lemon meringue pies, you know. We could always do it on August 15th.
We have a few friends and acquaintances would probably be very supportive of that idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Can you combine that with a dunk tank? A dunk tank pie in the face. You know, who knows? We could go from there.
Yeah, right. Keep us on the air at least, right? This is the day in 1914 when the Panama Canal opened. It's also the day, and this for the aviation guys, this is the day when Will Rogers and Wiley Post were killed in a plane crash near Point Barrow, Alaska.
And in fact, there is a monument just south of Barrow, or the new name, which I can no longer pronounce. But it's about, I think, about 15 or 20 miles south, a big monument there.
Right. Oh, interesting. So this is the day in 1947 when India became an independent country. It's also Korean Liberation Day, 1945. When the 36-year Japanese occupation of Korea ended. And it's also, and this is for you, Craig, it's the Feast of the Assumption, the day when the Virgin Mary died and ascended into heaven. So all good Catholic schoolboys remember that.
Right? I do very much. And I think that I celebrated it multiple times a year and probably have enough stored up to the present. Yeah.
So let's move into small talk with about the Bashan Fire District and the Fire District levy. And I want to welcome Matt Vinci. Matt, maybe take a few minutes to tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about how you got to Bashan and what you've been doing here on the island.
Well, again, thank you for having me. It's an honor here to be here, you know, with you on the show, and an honor to serve as your fire chief on Bashan. I've been here a little over a year. I got here last June, and celebrated my 1 year not too long ago as the fire chief here on Bashan. I am originally from the East Coast. I was born in Newton, Massachusetts. And lived in the Boston area for a short period of time before my parents moved north to to Vermont. I moved up there with my mom and lived in the southern part of Vermont, went to high school in southern Vermont, and then was involved in my fire department, my local fire department in high school, kind of got the bug as you do in the business, and went off to college and got my associate's degree in fire science, kind of all what you need to get into the academy, came back and got hired in 1992 with the city of South Burlington, Vermont, fire department. And I spent almost 18 years there. I was a firefighter. I worked on an aid car, an ambulance for a short period of time. Excuse me. I worked on an engine. I was promoted to lieutenant, promoted to captain, which oversaw the shift operations. And then in my period of time in Vermont, I got involved in advocacy for the fire service. I was involved in our local labor union that represented the firefighters in South Burlington as a local officer. And then I rose up to become the president of the Professional Firefighters of Vermont, where I served in that capacity on the board for 12 or 13 years, president for about 8 years. Lobbied the legislature advocating for resources for the fire service, and really with an emphasis on protecting those that go out the door and do the work every day. We've passed a lot of legislation and provided a lot of resources for firefighters across the state that they work you know, they're able to enjoy you know, today, you know, back in Vermont. And then I had an opportunity to didn't have any aspiration to go to Washington, D.C., but in 2013, I received a phone call. I was actually putting my gear on the truck, coming back from the legislature, and I was going in for my evening tour, and got a call to asking if I would be interested in coming and working on a national level down in Washington, D.C., which I took a little bit to get to yes. A kid that grew up in Vermont going to D.C., you know, it was a little bit of deer in headlights moment. But I went down to D.C., and I was became the director of education, training, and human relations for the International Association of Firefighters, and I served in that capacity for about 8 years. I had a stint as chief of staff through the transition of our leadership, and then decided I really wanted to go back out in the field. I kind of checked the box and had a great experience in D.C., and I was looking for a place to continue my service in the business that I've been in for 28 years, and landed here in Vashon. Couldn't have been a better fit, I believe. You know, I'll let others figure that out as well. But you know, I'm from Vermont. It's got that Vermont feel. You know, it's I love advocating for the profession, to be able to serve the community that we serve, and you know, I really took to the members of VIFR. That was really an attraction to me, to you know, go and talk to folks before I took the job and just hear about their dedication to serving the island, and you know, I wanted to be a part of that. So that's it in a nutshell. I got several other stories there, but that's kind of my life in the fire service.
Can I ask a quick question, Bruce?
Oh sure.
My quick question is, you know, I belong to the union, the Airline Pilots Association, for a number of years. And I know that one of the things that the union was responsible for, and that is a huge thing that they advocated for, is safety. And many of the safety rules and many of the time, you know, the work rules and those sorts of things came from the union that are now adopted by the FAA. Do you have the same kind of issue with firefighters?
We do. Excuse me. We do. I'm sorry. We do. You know, our safety rules are at the local, state, and federal level, and a lot around the occupational health and safety regulations. So I got pretty heavily involved in that in Vermont to ensure that we had a safe workplace in the fire station. So they had a safe environment. You know, we spend 24, 48, 72 hours in that environment. So we advocated for, you know, facilities, safety and facilities, safety around our apparatus. And then when we, like, as we say, when the bell hits and we go out the door, you know, we want to ensure that we have the right amount of people on the job, on the fire ground, so that, you know, it's a safe environment for what is one of the most, you know, challenging and dangerous professions in the country.
Right. Thanks.
Yeah, crazy.
Real quickly, I mean, that's a whole other show. Is about yeah, exactly. The benefit of unions. As a card-carrying teamster, I can vouch for the fact that a lot of the safety regulations and driving those trucks came from the union. It did not come from up above.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Matt, before Kevin jumps in, let me ask you a quick question just for perspective. So what size was the town you grew up in Vermont? And then what size is a city of South Burlington? Just give us some perspective there.
Yeah, sure. The size of the town I grew up in Vermont, I went to a regional high school. I played hockey. I want to just say that. Love hockey. I'm a big hockey fan. I grew up in Williamsville, Vermont. I think the population had to have been about 2,500. It's a kind of a suburb of Newfane, Vermont, which is about 5,000. And then I went to Leland and Gray Union High School. So small town, small town feel. Everybody knew everyone, and everybody knew everyone's business, of course. And then South Burlington, the city of South Burlington, when I was there, I got hired in 92. Kind of perspective with the fire service, as the city grew, it's a suburb of a small area outside of the city of Burlington. Chittenden County is the largest county in Vermont. And kind of put things into perspective, Vermont has roughly 700,000 people, in the 800,000 people in the whole state. Over a third of them are just in Chittenden County in the Burlington area.
Wow.
So we had a kind of a little bit of a metro area for Vermont going in Burlington. South Burlington just continued to grow. It sprawled, and I believe there are about 25,000 people in South Burlington right now. But when I got on the job, as we say back on the East Coast, we were doing just under 900 calls a year in the city of South Burlington. And as a union representative, I advocated for us to ensure that as the population grew, that our services and our ability to deliver services grew so that we could meet the needs of the community. And when I left, that engine that I'm on is doing about 3,500 calls a year now.
Wow.
So it grew, and that just proportionally grew. The activity in the fire in our department grew as that city grew and got busier. So I hope that gives you a little perspective of my experience. Yeah.
Thanks. Help. That does. It helps. Kevin.
Wow. Matt, great to hear your background and your experience and the fact that you're on the show today. I was going to ask if, since I did a quick internet search, there are ferry services in Vermont, whether they run on time. But the real question we should be asking you is, tell us about the recent levy vote and what it means for Vashon Maury Islanders, and particularly since I live due west of the Burton station. I'm particularly keen to hear about what's going to happen there in Burton.
Yeah, a lot to talk about with the levy vote. First off, I want to thank the voters of Vashon for supporting the vote. We asked we put the question on the ballot, and almost 62% of those that voted in the affirmative. So, that's a strong message that we feel. And I'll say also that the rank and file, feel back in the station. They feel very supported by this community, and I think that's important. What the levy means now is that we're going to be able to implement critical goals that we've been working on through our strategic plan, critical goals that result back in the best possible service that we can on a daily basis when someone calls 911. We're starting to implement those, and I can talk a little bit more about, where we're going with the implementation of the strategic plan. But the overall goals in the strategic plan, which I think we'll get into a little bit deeper, are to be able to provide enough resources to meet the needs of the island and the challenges, as everyone knows, about living and working on an island, are very applicable to being able to deliver emergency services on an island. We don't have automatic mutual aid that can come in a timely fashion and support our needs when we're 2 and 3 and 4 calls deep. So we're working on aspects of the levy and implementing aspects of the levy. I'm looking forward to having a further deeper dive about what we're doing to put that return on investment back into the community.
Yeah, so to follow up on that, we understand that there's been some reorganization within the fire department. And can you explain what that reorganization was and why it was important and kind of what changes we're likely to see?
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to refer to the strategic plan several times because I have a little bug here this morning. Sorry. We underwent an agency evaluation shortly after becoming fire chief. I asked the board for permission or support to move forward with looking at all aspects of our organization, lifting up the hood, putting it on the lift, and looking at all aspects of how we operate here on Vashon. It had been over 20 years since we had done a real strategic plan or an agency evaluation. So we performed that. We brought in an outside consultant. It was a community-based agency evaluation and strategic plan. And what came one of the deliverables that came out of that plan was a reorganization of our command staff, our chief staff. And we actually have one less person on days within that daytime staff than we did in the previous administration. So the reorganization that you referred to, Truman, is now has two division chiefs. We have a division chief of training and support services. That's Ben Davidson. Grew up on Vashon Island. Graduated from Vashon High. 15 years with the organization. And then our division chief of fire and EMS operations is Scott McDonald, and he came to us from South King Fire. It really reflects the day-to-day operations of the fire district. That's what we were really looking at, building a model that worked, that really kind of reflected how we operate on a daily basis. The operations of the organization, going out the door to 911 calls, that's kind of in the operations lane for our operations chief, and then the division chief overseeing kind of training, strategic planning, facilities, and equipment. There's three of us on days, myself and the two division chiefs, down from one daytime position that when we reorganized, we moved that position onto shift, which supports our shift operations.
Yeah, Craig.
Yeah, Truman has tried to explain this in prior shows. And I'm sure it resonated with many, many people, but sometimes you need somebody else to explain it to lock in. We've heard a lot about what it's going to cost, the levy lift, and how we've heard all these different percentages, 6%, 3%, 24%. You know, the question, I guess, really is, can you, in simple language, if that's possible, tell us what it could cost Islanders over the next 6 years? And also, is it going to make a difference if property values go up or property values go down? How does that all interact? In 25 words, no, I'm just kidding.
I'll give it a shot. Yes, I've heard and explained it multiple times. Over the course of the campaign, as we went out and spoke to folks about the levy. So it's a 6-year levy. It's not a new levy. We're coming off of a 6-year levy that was approved by the voters back in 2017. It's the same levy. So what we asked the voters to do was to renew the levy and do what we call a lid lift. We're currently at $1.12 per thousand of assessed value. And the next year, now with the approval of the new 6-year levy, we'll go from $1.12 to $1.50. It's important to note that we cannot tax over $1.50. That's the state maximum. So there was discussion on us going up over $2, and that's just not allowable under the tax structure within the state. Each year, we can tax an additional 6% on the previous year's tax rate. So
may I clarify one thing? It's the dollar amount, not the percentage. You can increase by 6% of the dollar amount.
That's correct.
Yeah, I just want to be clear.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. So we can, yeah, we can increase it by 6% of the dollar amount of the previous year, but no more than $1.50. So we can't tax over $1.50. What it is going to cost?
Quick question, if I might.
Absolutely.
So at this point, you know, you can increase 6% of the dollar amount. Is that dependent on housing valuation or independent of housing valuation at this point?
Yeah, there's no impact on whether the assessed valuations go up or down. The 6% has to be voted on by the board every year. It's optional too, I should mention. It's not an automatic. So the board would have to vote on that annually.
Sorry, I got to jump in here again. Having been a park commissioner, I really, really know this stuff. One of the things that can happen is if the property values go up, say, 10%, which is possible, that dollar amount cannot be $1.50 anymore, because that as the chief said, we're just going from $1.12. What was approved was $1.50 6 years ago, but because property values increased so much, and they can only increase by that at that time 1% over that dollar amount, that means that it was actually $1.12 is what the levy worked out to be. So I know it's confusing as heck, but right now it can never, like he said, it can never go over that $1.50, no matter what the property values do.
Yeah, and a great example of that is in 2022, the fire levy was at about $1.34, $1.35. Mm-hmm. With the valuations going up the way they did on the island, as everyone knows, we eroded to $1.12 in 1 year. Yep. So we went from $1.34, $1.35 to $1.12. So that's why we asked for the lid lift from $1.12 back up to $1.50. But there is a mechanism built into the taxing structure that as assessed valuations go up, we're not collecting more taxes. I think that was another discussion point during the campaign or during the election. But we can't tax over that $1.50, but as the AVs go up, we don't collect more taxes. Our rate goes down to keep us at or around the same amount of revenue off of our fire levy.
Just to put it in dollars and cents, have you got a what is the average price of a home, value of a home on Vashon? Do you know offhand?
It is, the last I knew, it was close to 900,000.
Okay, 900,000. Yeah. And do you have those figures inside your head, what that would mean now that the levy lift has been approved, what it would be on $800,000 or $900,000? Round it up to a million if you want to.
But yeah, let me do per month. It's about $22, $24 a month.
Well, and what was it last year? Do you know?
It's a $22 to $24 increase. So, depending on, I don't have the exact number as to, what it would total.
That's good.
But it's about $22 to $24 per month increase.
Increase. Okay.
Yeah. And that's on a $750,000 to $800,000, house. We do know that AVs came down across the island a little over 12%. They'll see a decrease in assessed values in 2023. We've been talking with the assessor's office about that. They actually have an interesting tool on the assessor's website that you can plug in your exact dollar amount, or actually you go right to your property. It tells you what your 23 assessed value is going to be, and it lays out every single taxing authority or taxing levy, and gives you exactly how much you'll pay for each individual service.
And that's on which website?
That is on the King County Assessor's website.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Thanks. So, Matt, as you get new funds, so this is going to go up potentially 6% or whatever the board decides. What are those new funds going to be used for? Is there a plan? Is there a proposed list of prioritized list of what the expenditures are going to be? Or could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this is a plan that we built based on our strategic plan. It's a six-year plan. Our strategic plan is available on our website, as is our agency evaluation, and it lays out the critical needs of the fire district. They cover the big buckets, as I like to call them, are staffing, equipment, and facilities. You know, and I think that's, you know, no different than other industries or other service delivery models, but those are our big budget items. The one real critical need was staffing. When I got here in June, due to retirements, vacancies that hadn't been filled, positions that weren't in the academy yet, we were at six uniform career firefighters at one point. We had one that was on a leave of absence. We had a couple scenarios going on, but to get up every day and fill a minimum of three on every shift, we only had six career firefighters. There's four platoons, so they work 48 hours on, 6 days off. And there's four rotating platoons, and it's all done by the amount of work hours within a work cycle that they're that they work. So I don't want to, I can get a little bit in the weeds on that, but we have four shifts, so four captains, and at the time we had six. We went to work right away to hire some additional staff. There was money in the budget to be able to fill those positions. So staffing has been laser focused on hiring staff, getting them through the academy, getting them certified, and getting them on shift. And that is going to be a continuation as we continue to increase our staffing.
I have a question about staffing, and that is, you were talking about getting folks through the academy and getting them trained. I know that in a previous life, we had trouble when we trained people. Once they got trained, they went somewhere else because they could make better money or whatever. Are you folks experiencing anything like that?
Well, when I got here last year, we had two staff that had left and lateraled to other departments, one to King County Medics and one to Bothell Fire. So I recognize that, you know, retention was an issue. I'll also say we do see that with our volunteers, and that's a trend around King County and, you know, around the country. A lot of folks get in, their first step in the fire service is to be a volunteer. I was. That's how I got in the business. And then they get their training and they go somewhere else to get a job full time. So that we have seen that. We've had 71 people go through the Volunteer Academy on Island in the last 10 years, and we've retained six.
Wow.
And that's because a lot of them, you know, either have busy homes, they work off island, they move off island, but a majority of them go get hired somewhere. So retention is an issue. We haven't had anyone leave since I've been here, so I'm proud of that. But it's a 20-week academy that they go to, 5 days a week. It's the full-time academy over in King County. We're part of the South King County Fire Training Consortium, and they come out of there ready to hit the street and work on Vashon. So that's the staffing is the big buck, one of the big buckets, going back to the original question there on where we're investing the levy.
Quick question about the staffing that you have and the staffing you hope to have. Didn't you just recently have like 18 incident calls within some ridiculously short period of time?
Yeah.
How did you cover them?
Well, we've had multiple scenarios since I've been here. And, you know, I think letting the public know what we do is one of the most important jobs I have. I report to the public and I report to the board, and you know, we want to be open and transparent about our operations. So we've been doing that regularly. We've had multiple scenarios within 24 and 48 hour instances with simultaneous calls, sometimes up to three and four at the same time. It's a huge challenge. It keeps me up at night. I take my job very you know, my responsibility, very, very, you know, it's a high responsibility, I should say, and seriously. And, you know, it keeps me up when I see that call going like we did last night. We had three calls going on, simultaneous calls going on, last night, and working with, our career staff, our chiefs, and our volunteers were able to kind of patch together enough to get those calls covered. Sometimes that was only one firefighter going out to a call, you know, somebody from VIFR showing up. That's not effective or safe. Saturday, we had 12 calls in a 24-hour time frame.
Wow.
This past Saturday, we had some critical calls. We had a CPR, which is, takes all of our staff and our medics to work somebody who's in cardiac arrest. They had a couple of car accidents. They had illegal burns. It just kept coming. You know, it comes in waves. But, you know, to answer your question, it's a challenge that we have, it's one of the number one areas in our strategic plan to address is to be able to have redundancy built in and enough staff to handle multiple calls. We have about 250 occasions annually where we have more than one call going on at the same time. That's data that we've kept and, that we need to address. It's something as the fire chief I need to address. So staffing is definitely our number one bucket, going back to the levy and investing the levy. We graduated 7 out of the academy recently, and I want to kind of clarify how we staff. 4 shifts. Our goal is to get all 4 shifts to 6 career firefighters on each shift. So there'll be a captain at Station 55 on Bank Road with 3 firefighters, EMTs, and then a lieutenant and a firefighter EMT at Burton Station, which I know we're going to talk about opening up the Burton Station here. It's been a central focus of our strategic plan. So in order to do that, we need 24 FTEs, 24 full-time employees to accomplish that. But not all 24 are available. Not all 24 are on shift. They work 48 on, 144 off. So we're working towards that goal. Currently today, we have 18 full-time career firefighter EMTs. So they're spread out over 4 shifts. And we have 2 shifts of 5 and 2 shifts of 4 right now. So we're incrementally building up to that 6 per shift. And again, back to our strategic plan, that was one of the main goals in our strategic plan. Go ahead. Yep.
Well, I was going to say thanks for covering that strategic plan, and definitely like to know what do you think the schedule is for opening up that Burton station?
Yeah, definitely. We have been working on all aspects of being ready if the voters were to approve the levy to have that station open and deliver on our promise to get that vital resource ready to go and down in Burton. So there's a lot of aspects around building that out. And we are committed to having that station open no later than November 1st of this year. So we have a plan in place. We've been working with the county on septic for that area. We have a temporary structure that we have signed a contract. The board had a special board meeting on August 2nd following the results of the levy to act on several areas that I had asked them to consider so that we're ready for November 1st. And one of those contracts that they authorized me to sign was a temporary building structure that we'll put in the parking lot down in Burton, which will house our staff. That building in Burton and the building out in Docton do not have any living quarters. They don't even have a shower. They have a basic bathroom and three garages to back the trucks in. So we need to have living quarters for our staff down there. I'm hoping the neighborhood will enjoy it as much as we do, because we have a nice, aesthetically pleasing, but very safe and comfortable area for our staff to be able to live in there. It's going to be a nice 14 by 42 structure that will go in the parking lot, and we'll have an area for them to do their reports, for them to have their lunch and dinner, and live there for 48 hours.
And I was just going to ask that. So they're on for 48 at that facility.
They are. That's correct. Okay. Yeah. And the other, to kind of go a little deeper dive into that, to give the audience a little understanding as to our preparation, we need to build out that schedule. We're building out our run response card. So we're dispatched through ValleyCom over in South King County. All the South King County agencies are dispatched through ValleyCom. So we're building out the run response for that area. There's a lot of details to putting a station in service like we were doing that we've been getting ahead of and ready for that November 1 date that we promised the public that we would deliver on.
So that to follow up then, that that brings us to you have a six-year plan, and I assume you're going to implement that plan over that 6-year period. Are there some things that you can point out to what will happen when year one, year two, year four, so forth.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the immediate needs of the 6-year plan were staffing, equipment. I haven't mentioned equipment, but we have 6 vehicles that we've identified that need to be replaced over the next 6 years. So we're scheduling that out. It is a major challenge in our industry to secure new vehicles, whether it even be replacing our 22-year-old staff cars. Just getting a new pickup has been a year-long process, and because we go through government purchasing, and there's just a demand. I had heard at one point Ford had a 20,000. They were back ordered by 20,000 vehicles across the country for public safety, and we were one of those 20,000, or a couple of those 20,000. So we're replacing a fleet that is the oldest in King County. On average, our apparatus fleet is 19.5 years old. We have 2 engines. The engine that will respond out of the Burton station is 23 years old. The pump on it needs about $10,000 worth of work. It's got a twin that's out in Docton. Both of those pumps are obsolete. You can't get parts for them anymore, and they need a lot of work. So to save a long story about fire pumps, we have made the decision that we need to replace those sooner rather than later. We lose insurance ratings credit for the age of those vehicles.
Wow.
So it has a compounding effect when these vehicles get old. Not only, the number one issue is safety. So when our staff pull up at 3 in the morning and there's fire coming out the front door, we want to be able to have water come out those hoses. And I know you do too. So, mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we have a modern fleet. So back to the 6-year plan, it does involve staffing. It involves equipment, replacing those 6 vehicles. The board authorized me to purchase 2 brand new aid cars, 2 new ambulances. So the island will be seeing new ambulances in early 2024. We were able to secure chassis, which has been a big challenge for 2 vehicles that will hit the street sometime in early 2024. Those are replacing 2 ambulances that are 11 and 14 years old and have a combined 200,000 miles on them. So they've served the island well, but they're ready for their next life. And then investing in our facilities, working to invest in buildings. Burton and Docton are, built in the 50s, and they've got some significant issues that need to be addressed. So that's another big bucket that we've been addressing in the 6-year plan. If I can, the 4 major topic areas in our strategic plan, and these are really big buckets and a lot more to talk about, but our community outreach, our what we call our risk reduction, and that is CPR AED classes. We've been delivering those since the first of the year, and we've just had an outpouring of folks that would like to attend those, and I think we're over 150 people have gone through our CPR AED training.
Wow.
And that's at no cost to our to island residents. Smoke detectors. We've installed over 150 smoke detectors on in homes on the island, and we continue to. So if you'd like to get your smoke detector replaced, your batteries replaced, go on VIFR.org. There's an easy form to fill out. Goes to our admin, and we'll be calling you to schedule to have your detector looked at. Our crews come over. They look at your... They look at access to your property. They can give you advice around that. So it's a win-win for all. And then wildland planning, wildfire planning, something I know we might touch upon here, but we just did a class with King County Conservation District. But that's kind of our community risk reduction bucket. Our other bucket is firefighter recruitment, retention, training, and professional development. That's in our 6-year plan, and that hits on both our career and volunteer firefighter training and promotional opportunities within our organization. Our fire district resource deployment bucket in our strategic plan is staffing, and central to that is staffing the Burton station. I also want to touch upon, maybe you can have me back to talk about mobile integrated health. It's a new program that we're going to be rolling out this fall, which is non-urgent, non-911 health services on the island, which we all know we need. We are going to be rolling out a lot of information on mobile integrated health. Matter of fact, we met with all the island partners yesterday, the hospital district, the Senior Center, the Dove Project, they're all involved, and we're all at the table talking about how we can best serve Vashon.
Right.
And then last, if I can, the last bucket is planning for future fire and emergency medical service needs. So that is our facilities and our equipment. So those are the big strategic plan buckets.
Wow.
Kevin.
Right. Yeah, Matt, in that list of services, you mentioned that your staff, you would have people go out and look at people's homes on Vashon and give them feedback about possible fire risk. I think the Beachcomber just last week had a King County contact to provide that same service. Could you tell us more about that and what you recommend for Vashon folks who want somebody to put an eye on their property about fire hazards and how to maybe mitigate the risk of wildfire on the island?
Absolutely. Yeah. What I was touching upon is, you know, our staff would come out for, you know, smoke detector installations or battery replacements. And while they're there, they have been asked, and we get asked, I know our crew was out yesterday, you know, looking at a property for access, like, you know, giving advice on, we need to take some trees down because you got to get a fire engine in here that's 30 feet long. We're building new trucks with, you know, the shortest possible wheelbase that we can get in the industry. But we still have access issues, and that, we had that over on Cove Road, 2 weeks ago, as we had a working structure fire, residential structure fire on Cove Road with some access issues. So what you're referring to, is King County Conservation District, which is a great resource. We have had them over twice now to our station to deliver education to the public, and they will come out and they actually have grant opportunities for folks to be able to get some funding to remove debris, remove fuel from around your home. And they'll come and kind of put together a risk reduction plan with you at your home. So it kind of goes hand in hand. The work that our staff are doing are talking about, you know, how do we get an aid car in? How do we get access with a fire engine? How do we lay in large diameter hose to bring water into the scene? And then King County Conservation District would be providing advice on how you, you know, would reduce fuel and fuel load and reduce you know, wildfire potential around your home. So all very important topics.
Great. Yeah, Craig.
Yeah, if I don't mean to open up in a giant can of worms, but obviously, in the news, people have been dealing and listening to the tragedy of Lahaina over in Hawaii. And on social media, there's a lot of talk about how that could never happen on Vashon. Although, as Bruce pointed out, there have been some major fires on Vashon over the last century or so. I mean, obviously, we have a larger, I think we do, moisture load in terms of the combustible materials that typically would be involved in a fire on Vashon, but is there the possibility of a major conflagration and the spread of fire on the island? And does the plan that you have and the effects of the levee lift, does it help in any way in mitigating the possibility of a giant fire like that on Vashon?
Well, you know, our hearts go out to Maui, to the Maui firefighters who, you know, fought that fire. They lost three engines. They have a couple of firefighters that have severe burns that are in the burn unit in Honolulu, as I understand. There's only about 100 firefighters on Maui. So it's a county department. And again, there you're gonna hear about a lot of reports that are early coming out of there, a lot for us to still learn. But they were completely out-resourced. You know, there was just no way to stop that wind-driven fire. There's been a tremendous amount of research. Matter of fact, last week, a friend of mine who I worked with at the International Association of Firefighters is the new U.S. Fire Administrator, Dr. Lori Moore Merrill. And she's doing a tremendous amount of work at the federal level. I just saw her in Seattle. She was over in Seattle, and we met for coffee last week. But she's doing a lot of work around wind-driven fires, both residential and wildland. I mean, it is just a challenge, and we're out resourced before we even go out the door with a wind-driven fire like that. So, you know, the preparation and work that we do on Vashon, on every single aspect of what we do, can help us prevent, you know, an incident like that. Now, can we, you know, could we, you know, wave a magic wand? You know, we don't know. It's it's a fuel issue. There's a lot of items that went into play there that that we'll learn about. Energy de-energizing the grid has been talked about substantially, but you got to look at some of the other impacts to that. They talked about if we de-energize the grid over there, we'd lose all our capability to pump water. So we lose a vital resource in putting fires out. So shutting down the grid might sound great because it's going to stop the lines from coming over, but you're not going to be able to pump water. And we have that issue. We would have that issue on Vashon with our water supply. But our partners, I got to give a plug out to Vashon Be Prepared and the work we do. Matter of fact, I'm meeting with Rick this afternoon. The work that we do continuously with our partners on the island are going to help us be prepared to hopefully mitigate those incidents at a smaller level. So getting there quicker, reducing the fire in a smaller stage is our goal. Getting there quicker out of the Burton station and out of the Bank Road station is going to help us get to what would have been possibly a small brush fire or grass fire, moving to becoming a larger incident in a very quick amount of time. Getting back to your question on will the levee help us? Anytime that we can increase our human resources, our physical resources, and get there in a shorter amount of time, it's going to mitigate the incident at a smaller stage and reduce us from having to deal with a larger fire that spreads very quickly. So I can't guarantee us ever. I'd never be able to guarantee we wouldn't have a large scale incident like that. But preparation and having the right resources in place is going to put us in a much better place.
Two quick questions, and I hope they're quick. One of the questions would be, obviously, communication is going to be a huge factor in a large event like that. And I'm just wondering, do you see the Voice of Vashon being a part of that communication effort? We can get word out to the community at large about things to do, like, for example, our emergency alert service that we have, both on email and over the radio. And do you see us becoming an integral part of that plan?
Absolutely, and you already are. It's vital. I mean, it's one of the, I believe, one of the areas that's going to come out of Maui is the early indicators to evacuate. And I'm not going to prejudge that. I don't know all of it, but that we are hearing that there weren't early indicators to evacuate, and then evacuating, how you evacuate. So all of that takes a good communication network to put into play.
That brings the second question, and that is, flying over the island, it's obvious that the road system is not totally adequate for handling an evacuation and that sort of thing. So I guess the question is, I assume you have a plan of all of the roads and all of the ways to get into places, but also to get people out of those places, and how do we communicate that to those to the folks?
Yeah, there is a plan that was been in place before. I won't take credit for it. It was done before I got here. It's been discussed. It's on paper. Exercising the plan is critical. We need to do a tabletop. We need to do an actual drill. We need to exercise it. We need to use Voice of Vashon to get, out the message out. It's going to be a lot more than just VIFR, to accomplish that. Okay. Having a plan, exercising it, having the resources in place, and getting ahead of it as much as we possibly can is going to be our goal every day we get up and go to work.
And it seems to me like it's the onus is on us to get people to pay attention to this. So we need to get the word out. Hey, we're going to be a vital link for you folks, should this occur.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, you already are. And I've learned a lot from that. I will say too, you talk about prevention and getting ahead of it. We did a burn ban on the island back in June. A stage one burn ban, and that was early to get ahead of, the season. And I will say, I'm a little ahead of myself now, but I've been in touch with King County yesterday. It comes out of the county and the county fire marshal's office that I've requested that we go to a stage two burn ban on Vashon. So stay tuned. I think we're going to be moving towards that very soon here, maybe even by the end of the day today.
Good.
Thank you. Well, Matt, I want to thank you for coming on the Brown Briefly, having this very open discussion about Vashon Island and fire and rescue, the levee list, and what it means for the island. We've only got about a minute, minute and a half here. So let me ask Craig and Kevin for maybe 30 seconds or a minute. Two significant things yesterday. One, a ruling in a Montana court in favor of a group of young people who allege the state violated their right to a, quote, clean and healthy, healthful environment in the Montana state constitution. How significant is that?
That's very significant. There's been a number of those cases that have been dismissed, but this one, kind of because of the vagaries of the Montana constitution, which supported the position of the young individuals who've are prevailing on that case, is it could start a wave of successful cases, similar cases.
Kevin.
Yeah, and Bruce, islanders who've attended the Vashon Climate Action Group Earth Fair remember that we had a spokesperson from our Children's Trust some years ago. It's gratifying to see the case moving the way it is. We've been trying to shut down Puget Sound Energy's coal plants in Montana for some long time. The legislature is actively trying to keep them open and keep the mining and the coal ash ponds and the groundwater contamination going. So maybe this new trial will change the course of Montanans and get to a cleaner environment and climate for us.
We're out of time. So next edition of the Brown Beef Briefly next week, we'll see you. For Kevin, Matt, Truman, Craig, I'm Bruce Holman. We will see you next week. Thank you.